Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
The tale of two baseball teams, and that's where we'll start. We'll get into the NFL, I promise you. Apparently, Daniel Jones has looked, and I get it's just training camp, but apparently he's looked very, very good, made a couple of throws yesterday, one specifically to Paul Perkins, which was brilliant. Guys said they haven't seen a throw like that in a long time. Eli looks good, but in the intermediate underneath game. So we'll get into the Giants. We'll get into the Jets. The NFL is here. We're, 5 days away from Giants-Jets. That's next Thursday, so we will. We'll do Stump Rothenberg. RJ Bell will join us. We'll get into baseball and the NFL with him. But we'll start with a little Major League Baseball. 800-919-3776. As always, very, very interactive with me and you on a Saturday morning. So last night, out to dinner with the family. First inning, Mets put up two. And I'm sitting there thinking, really? Tuna? Here we go. 2-0. Then they make it 3. Then I get home and they're up 3-0 and Mats gets through the third and you start thinking to yourself, really? Because you can't help it, right? You've won 7 in a row and you've got very winnable games this weekend and very winnable games Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 2 on Monday, 1 on Tuesday, 1 on Wednesday, and then it gets difficult. But you start to think to yourself, maybe they can. Maybe they can. And they go up 3-0, and Mats, who threw a complete game shutout last time out, has thrown 3 good innings, and then you get to the fourth, and boom, 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 down 5-3, and that's it. You make it 5-4, you have a chance, big home run from Marte, 8-4, away you go, Mets lose. Frustrating. Not completely debilitating, but certainly frustrating. Look, you're not going to win, and I'm watching the game with my 8-year-old last night, and he says, you know, Dad, you can't lose games to the Pirates. You can't win every game. You can't win every game. So here's what you have to do now. We talked about it yesterday on the show. We'll talk about it today. You're the Mets. You have to figure out a way to win today and tomorrow. That's it. You have to figure out a way to win today and tomorrow. So you got Stroman today, his Mets debut. There's been a ton of excitement. I'm excited about it as well. And we talked about this a lot yesterday on the show with Rick and Chris. You can catch that show from 10 to 1 every Monday to Friday here on 98.7 ESPN. And that conversation is, the Mets are in it for now. Forget about looking at the Mets and saying, 2022, 2023, what's the minor league system going to look like? That's clearly not a concern for this organization right now. What's a concern for the Mets is being relevant now, being relevant next year, going all in and trying to be a good baseball team. Can they? Honestly, I don't know. Do I trust Brody Van Wagenen? The answer to that is no, I don't. Do you? I mean, you've seen what he's done so far. Of all the moves he's made, do you like them? Do you like what Brody has been? Do you like what Brody has done? Because honestly, even if you like the Stroman move, and I'm not saying Stroman's not an upgrade over Vargas, but even if you like the Stroman move, it's not like the Mets are a great baseball team. You look around and you say, yeah, they got a nice first baseman. You got a right fielder who's playing out of position. I mean, we know. We don't need to go through. I mean, they have a lot of guys playing out of position. They have good starting pitching, and they have a crap bullpen, which was evidenced again last night, because that's what they are. They've got good starting pitching. Sometimes they can hit the baseball. They're a bad fielding team, and they have an awful bullpen. That's the Mets. If you had to put it on a resume, right? What are the Yankees? Yankees have elite bullpen. Yankees have an elite lineup. Yankees are an elite organization. And I think the Yankees have, I don't know, all set, all in, average starting pitching, right? Probably so. Average. I know lately you say it's been awful, and it has, but over the long haul, average. I mean, Happ and CeCe and Tanaka, Herman, average. I think that's fair to say. What are the Mets? We know what the Mets are. They have terrific starting pitching. The problem is that the starting pitching hasn't been terrific all year long. And you look at Zach Wheeler and you say, yeah, but Wheeler was so good last time out, but he's pitching to an ERA of 4.5 in the National League. That's not great. So where are we? We're kind of treading water right now, if you're a Mets fan. But they're in. I mean, they didn't unload anything at the deadline here. Nothing. I mean, Vargas fine, but you added Stroman, so that's an upgrade. Probably not even a huge upgrade, but an upgrade nonetheless. And now you look at the starting staff, and you know what it is, and that's how they're built. Now, can it work? We'll see. Does Wheeler stay on this team next year? You make him an $18 million qualifying offer, I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance he just takes that. Don't you? So this is the Mets. But last night was frustrating because you start to, and this is the problem being a sports fan. By definition, a sports fan is off. You are. Because in sports, there's always these things that you've never seen before. There's always a team that's 9 games out with 12 games to play, and they come back. There's always the team that's down 35-3, and they come back. There's always the team that's down 27 points in the second half, and they come back. So as abnormal as it may be, it happens. And you've seen it happen. And you can't argue that the Mets, I mean, their starting staff might be the best in baseball. Their starting staff is, I don't know that I want to say elite, but it's pretty damn good. So can they get back into the race now? I mean, I think they probably dug themselves too big of a hole, and a loss like last night certainly is very painful, but can they? Is it worth keeping an eye on? Absolutely it is. And that's what we'll all do. So it stinks to lose that game last night. Stinks. Because you're up 3-0 on a team that's awful. The Pirates are done. The Pirates have completely given up on the season. But what can you do? That's baseball for you, right? So now you bounce back today. You hope to get a victory. You hope to get a victory tomorrow. You come home. You go 3-1 against the Marlins. And then maybe you have a chance to make some noise this season. Otherwise, this season is probably on the verge of being done. Because this is the time you have to clean up. These are the easy teams. This is the chance that you have if you're a fan of the New York Mets. The White Sox, bad. The Marlins, bad. The Pirates, bad. This is the run. It was Marlins, it was Pirates, it's White Sox, it's Pirates, it's Marlins. So clean up. Can they? We don't know. But just the winning 7 in a row and getting 4 games within a wild card spot is more than a lot of us thought, and it's a tease. Now, can they finish this off? Can they bring you to the point where they're playing meaningful baseball on September the 15th? That's why you watch. That's why you're intrigued. Right? And the Yankees, who bought, and this, it's funny to me. We'll get to the Mets and the Yankees here at 800-919-3776. But the Yankees are funny because you would think if you just turned on sports talk radio this past week, you would think that the Yankees are the Marlins. Oh, they're poorly run. Cashman doesn't know what he's doing. They didn't add anything in the pitching staff. The pitching staff stinks. They're not as good as Houston. What's going to happen the rest of the year? How will they find a way? They're fine. Now, do I think Houston's a better baseball team? I thought Houston was a better baseball team before Wednesday, to be honest with you. Do I think they're a better baseball team now? I think Houston is clearly a better baseball team. But does that mean the Yankees can't beat them in a 7-game set? Of course not. Of course the Yankees can beat them. Does it mean that Tanaka can't give you a gem? Or that Tanaka can't give you 5 1/3? And you saw it last night. And I said yesterday on our show, I said, first of all, the Red Sox to me are done. They are done. They had their nice little run. They thought about being sellers at the deadline. They got destroyed at home by Tampa, a series they could not afford to lose. And now they come to New York. So I'm telling you right now that the Yankees will win at least 3 or 4 or sweep this series. And that'll be the end of the Red Sox. You won't have to deal with that team anymore. But the Yankees are a good baseball team. And the Yankees will get better. And maybe Severino comes back. And maybe Betances comes back. And you know that Sanchez is coming back. And I imagine that Stanton's going to come back. Yankees will be fine. This whole, oh my God. Now, do I think that they could have used a pitcher at the deadline? Of course. Of course they should have. And of course they could have. That would have been the move. But who? Greinke to New York is not a fit. Zach Greinke is not a New York kind of guy. So I wouldn't go in that direction at all. And you couldn't, and you didn't. Bumgarner, I don't know if that's a possibility. And then after that, where did you want to go? Did you desperately want Robbie Ray? Is that who you wanted? Did you really want Mike Minor? I mean, are these the guys that if you had gotten Mike Minor and had him to finish off the rest of the season, that you would feel like, okay, now in a 7-game set against Houston, now I love my chances? Because Mike Minor or Matt Boyd or Robbie Ray? No. The guys to get, you really couldn't get. And let's be fair. I really believe, and I understand why, that teams do not want to deal with the Yankees. The Mets are not going to deal with the Yankees. Unless the Yankees are going to overpay through the nose, the Mets are not going to deal with the Yankees. So you want Syndergaard? Give us everything you have. You want Stroman? Give us everything you have. Otherwise, goodbye. So that ship sailed. Mets were a good fit. Not going to happen. Bauer, not going to trade him to the Yankees. They're competing with the Yankees. Bumgarner? I mean, Yankees could have been in play. In the end, they didn't even deal him at all. So do I think the Yankees had a misstep? I don't think they did great, but I don't know what else there was to do, to be honest with you. Now, I look at the offseason. Should you have gone after Corbin? I think so. You look at some of the moves of the last 3 or 4 years, have the Yankees hit on free agency and pitching? Well, you know what? There are guys that are out there that you would prefer were on the Yankees. If Gerrit Cole was on the Yankees right now, you'd feel a lot better about this team. But they're still, I mean, right there. It's Houston, it's the Yankees, it's the Dodgers. One of those three teams, odds are, prohibitively, will win the World Series.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
Let's get to your calls, 800-919-3776. James in Spring Valley. James, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Dave, my favorite, man. I missed you on the radio these last few weeks, man. Glad that you're back.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, James. What's on your mind today?
Of course. As a Yankee fan, I'm very concerned, worried about the starting rotation. I know that our bullpen's elite. I know our offense is elite. But I don't think bashing your way into a championship will work. My thing is, like, will the Yankees regret at least not making a move to help with this rotation? Because Houston is knocking in my door, and I remember you said this to Chris Canty on Humpty and Canty, that Houston will be the team that I will start to hate, and I'm starting to hate them.
I told you, because they're going to be the team that's in your way every single season. They're going to be the team that's in your way, and that's got to be frustrating.
And it's very frustrating, and that and we haven't won the World Series in 10 years. I know first world problems, but I would like for the Yankees to somehow, I don't know how they're going to get through the Astros, but are they going to regret this once they play the Astros in the best of seven to get to the World Series? Because
you might.
Yeah,
you might. You might get to the end of October, thanks for the call, James, and just be sitting there and say, you know what? Our lack of starting pitching cost us this season. You might. We didn't go out and get Patrick Corbin. You might. We could have had Gerrit Cole a couple years ago. You might. I mean, yes, there's an absolute chance of that. And you might be sitting there saying, there's another championship. I mean, I don't know. We don't have that answer right now. We'll know soon. 800-919-3776. Brian Cashman on the K Show yesterday. Did you talk with those crosstown New York Mets about making a deal at the deadline?
I talked to Brody quite a lot. You know, as I did with almost every team except for, obviously, I think I told you in Fenway, you know, we weren't engaged with Boston at all, but I was engaging everybody. So, yeah, I talked to the Mets.
And apparently the Mets wanted an arm and a leg. And good for the Mets. You know, you want a player that we have. We're in a position of strength for once. Pay us. And I'm sure the Yankees laughed at it, thought there's absolutely no way that that's going to happen. Fine. You know what? We don't need to trade Marcus Stroman. If you really want him, pay us. If you don't desperately want him, then go to battle with what you have. And I understand it from the Mets standpoint, and I understand it from the Yankees standpoint. I'm going to give you Davey Garcia and Floreal are two elite prospects for Marcus Stroman, who last year had an ERA of 5. No. No, thank you. Now, Brian Cashman did say yesterday on the K-Show, he's not against overpaying for a big-time player.
You know you have to overpay to get things done, but I'm not going to do something stupid. I'm not going to pay for things that are arguably not even difference-making moves. So the players that we really were going to be able to make a difference, they didn't get moved. You know, they're still residing with their clubs. Their clubs really did not have them in the open market like the speculation was. It didn't mean that they weren't having ongoing discussions to choose whether they were going to sell or not. They weren't in the position during the process. Like, we may sell, we'll line up just in case we do sell. But they made a decision to double down on their seasons and their team and hold for it and reinforce and try to go for it. And so those were some of the difference makers that we were hoping that could be available. But the others, they were not considered difference makers in my mind.
Right. So he's basically telling you Robbie Ray, Mike Minor, Matthew Boyd, controllable, young, decent, not difference makers. Madison Bumgarner, difference maker, probably couldn't get him. I mean, the Giants are right there. No, I don't think that they're good enough, but Bochy's going out, and they probably want to give him an opportunity. And they're right. I mean, San Francisco is 3.5 games out right now. Mets dropped to 5. So the Mets are behind Arizona, San Francisco, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Washington. So you got to pass either Washington or Chicago and every other team that I just read off that list. So a game like last night when you have a 3-0 lead against the Pittsburgh Pirates, you don't have the leeway now if you were the Mets. Win these next two games, get to 55-56, go 3-1 against Miami, and start to play some baseball. Otherwise, the season is done. Bobby, Miami. Bobby, you're on 98.7.
How you doing? So, yeah, I just want to give – I might be in the minority here, but Brian Cashman not making a move I think was the best thing that could have happened. He showed all the other GMs across the league that he'll not be pressured into a deal just because we seem desperate to get a starting pitcher. So the fact that he didn't make a move kept an eye on the future because now some of the pieces that we're keeping, I'm not saying a dynasty, but, you know, it looks exciting. Like if that
did it's
that
very 90. Exciting, but here's the thing. You say that now. It's August 3rd. You're excited. You love that the Yankees did nothing. Cashman stuck to his guns. If the Yankees lose and the starting pitching is awful against anybody in the postseason, will you make the same phone call in 4 months from now?
I would, because we have enough pieces around it to make it work. Our lineup's elite, our bullpen's elite. We just need these guys to get through 4 or 5 innings, and that's it. It's not like we need 6, 7 innings from these guys, or we have a bullpen that's questionable. Beginning to end, we have a couple closes in the bullpen there.
Listen, I agree with you, Bobby, but who do you trust to get through 5 innings? You trust Tanaka, right? Do you really trust Tanaka, Paxton?
Yeah.
Do you trust Paxton?
I think in the spot. In the big spot, I think he should have. I think he lives for the moment. He needs the motivation. But
you're talking Tanaka?
October, no, Paxton.
You say he lives for the moment. Why do you think that? I don't understand why you would say that.
Yeah, and then and Herman, he's proven himself. That's all we really need is 3 starters to get through this.
I don't. I mean, listen. You may win the whole thing, and I think you have a good chance. But I and thanks to the call, I am hardly convinced that this is a team that is starting pitching depth is good. I mean, do I trust Herman? No. No, I don't. Could he be fine? He could. Do I trust Verlander? Yes. Do I trust Cole? Yes. Do I trust Greinke? Yes. Do I trust Paxton? No. Do you? You can sit here and tell me that right now you completely trust James Paxton? I mean, he is a disaster in the first inning. Even last night where he was really good. By the way, I counted on Paxton going 6, and he went 6 last night. But he was really good, and even in the first inning last night, he fell behind. You trust Herman? You trust CeCe? Kinda, sorta, right? If he's on 10 days rest. I mean, the Yankees starting pitching is I would think, most probably the one thing that concerns you for the postseason run right now. If the Yankees had elite starting pitching, they would be the best team in baseball. But they don't. And that's okay. Listen, I still don't trust the Astros bullpen. We'll see. It's going to be interesting, I'll tell you that. You know what the amazing thing is? We're 2 months. There's 2 months of baseball. So you're a Yankees fan. I mean, what do you really have to look forward to right now? Obviously, October you do. But right now, what is it that keeps the needle moving for you?
Well, you got to win. You got to have the best record in the American League.
Well, that's up for debate right now. I mean, Houston is 71-40. Yankees are 69-39. So to you, it's really important. And by the way, that's Ty who just chimes in like the voice of God. Right, Ty?
Yes, I am the voice of God.
Chiming in like you own the show. Right?
Just offering some assistance.
No, you're a terrific guy. All right, so that to you is ultimately that important, huh?
Yeah, that's the only chance I would give them at beating the Astros.
So if the Yankees have to go on the road, you do not think they can beat the Astros?
No, we saw this story before in 2017. And it's even worse now that they got Verlander and Greinke.
You don't think the Yankees can win a game in Houston?
Not that I don't think they can win a game, but if you got to go out there like you were in the situation last time where you had to win game 6 or 7 on the road, I don't think you can do it with that starting pitching. So you have to have the best record in the American League. That's what you have to play for these last couple of months.
Yeah, I think the home field is important, but that's what you're playing for. I mean, these games are not do or die for the last couple of months. So really, realistically, the Yankees will not have a game of true meaning for the last 10 weeks of the season. Because as much as you want home field, and I get it, and I understand why you do, it's not do or die. So the Yankees will basically just coast home for the final 10 weeks of the season and then have to turn it on. 800-919-3776. Alvin in the car. You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, Alvin?
I am so happy that Cashman dropped the ball on not getting Greinke. I think he should have gone after Greinke because, one, it would have fixed their situation with the starting pitching. I mean, would have fixed the situation this season with getting a starting pitcher, right? Not only that, think about the lineup next season with Greinke on the mound.
Greinke's not a New York guy, and I don't think Greinke would have even come here. And Greinke's a guy that hears a lot of outside noise. A smaller market is much better for Zach Greinke.
Yes, I understand. But if you're going by that, then why limit yourself to getting great pitchers? I mean, Baumgartner, he's a great pitcher, but he's not a New York guy. So if you guys are only going by that, because it makes no sense. You guys need a starting pitcher.
I'm not a Yankees fan. Don't lump me in with that.
Me either. Okay, me either. I'm not a Yankees fan either. But what I'm saying is, they needed an ace. They needed a starting pitcher. I'm saying, okay, they're going by the situation. No, he's not a New York guy. But how do you know that if he's never been playing in New York before?
Alvin, have you seen that New York is just not the place for them? From Whitson to Sonny Gray. I mean, we've seen it. There are some guys that New York is just not the place for them.
Yeah, but you won't give it a shot, though? You won't say, okay, I don't think
Greinke wanted to come to New York. And Baumgartner didn't even get dealt from San Francisco. It's not like Baumgartner went somewhere else and the Yankees could have gotten involved with him. He's still there.
So basically we're going by, we didn't go after Greinke because he's not a New York guy? That's not a good excuse
excuse. It's the truth. Zach Greinke in New York would have been an absolute disaster.
How do you know that?
Because he's had issues during his career pitching in big markets.
I'm not a Yankees fan. I don't care. Like I said, I'm happy they didn't get him. But all I'm saying is they would have gotten him. They would have gotten a good pitcher, a great pitcher. Okay, let's see. Maybe he doesn't do good in New York. But you never know that. And not only that, next season, look at the pitcher rotation for the Yankees next season. I am happy I didn't get Greinke. I mean, you have Severino, Greinke, Tanaka in a lineup. Look at it by paper, how the GMs look at it. By paper, on the paper. That would have been an amazing starting rotation.
It was if never you would have happen, had Alvin.
Severino.
Alvin, you know who else would look good here? Thanks to the vote. Cy Young in his prime would have looked great with the Yankees. Also not going to happen. Zach Greinke, it was not going to happen. The fit of Greinke to the city of New York would have been a disaster in the making. And he knew it, and the Yankees knew it. Him in Houston, where he's the third guy in a much less pressure-packed city, that's fine. Look, do I think that Cashman has been great in bringing in pitchers in the offseason? No. I mean, I never loved Paxton. I still don't love him. Sonny Gray was a disaster. So, no, I don't. But do I think that the Yankees can wind up on the other side of this thing looking back and saying we won in spite or they were good enough that we won? Yes, and so do you.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
I don't know if you're like this. So anything on the Jets and the Giants, we'll open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. So I'm excited. Oh, I can't wait. Thursday night, right? Thursday night, August 1. Football starts. Here we go. Can't wait. 8 days, 4 days, 2 days. Oh, it's finally here. You turn on the game. It's preseason football. It's guys you never, it's like, this is terrible. I'm sorry. I mean, I sat there and I watched as much of it as I could. It's not entertaining football. Now, if it's your team, I think you feel a little bit differently. Like Thursday night when it's the Giants or even the Jets, I mean, I'll be glued to everything because I want to know everything about, I don't care who the 52nd guy on the Denver Broncos is going to be. Now, I watched it, but for me to sit here and tell you that, I couldn't get enough of Broncos-Falcons meaningless preseason football, one of five games those teams are going to play, I'd be lying to you. I mean, it's still football, but it did not exactly move the needle for me. All right, let's kind of slowly get into a little bit of the local flavor here for the Jets and the Giants. I think we have very different views of the Jets and the Giants. I think that actually, if you look at it, the Jets are the team that has, and I don't know if you want to say pressure is the right word, the Jets are the team that has the expectation of this year. They do. The Jets can't go in there and say, all I need is Sam Darnold to play well, and that's a wonderful season for us. No, you can't have that this season. What it has to be this year is Sam Darnold has to go out there and lead his team to victories. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, you got to get to the postseason. I don't know that I would be on that. I don't think that that's true. But you need to play, and this is what Adam Gase said, and I think this is true, you need to be playing competitive football late in the season. So I don't want to start at 2-5 and say, oh, you know what, we won 5 of our last 7 to get 8-8. No, I mean, if I'm a Jets fan, I have the expectation, there's talent on this team. I mean, you signed Khalil. Now, I don't know what he's going to do for you. He didn't play at all last year, but you signed him as your new center. The offensive line is pedestrian, probably at best, but you got some decent receivers, and you have a running back who you think is going to be really good, and you have a quarterback who you really like, and when Herndon comes back, tight end should be serviceable. The defense should be good. I mean, granted, I don't know how they're going to get to the quarterback unless they send pressure, but the defense should be pretty good. I mean, the secondary should be good. The safeties are excellent. If Marcus May can ever get himself healthy, linebackers with Mosley should be much better, and the defensive line's got to be very good. So I look at the Jets and I said, this is a team that, I mean, absolutely can compete for a playoff spot. And anything less than competing for a playoff spot to me is an unfulfilling season for the Jets. Now, there are other, you know, mile markers along the way. You know, what is Sam Darnold? I mean, if Sam Darnold has a season just, you know, out of this world, then the Jets go 6-10. I'd be disappointed, but at least you look at it and you say, we have a stud quarterback. I think that's a necessity for this season. But I think the Jets are a team that can absolutely compete for a playoff spot and should compete for a playoff spot. The problem is, and this is daunting, and you don't know when, I mean, it's got to end at some point, but you don't know when, is the Patriots are so good. And it's very difficult to envision New England not winning this division. So if right off the bat, you know New England's going to win the division because they're going to win 11 or 12 games, and if not sweep you, best case, go 1-1 against you. So if they're going to win the division, now you're competing with all these other teams for two spots. So now, and that's what makes it so difficult, because the easiest way to get into the postseason is to win your division. And for the most part, that option for the Jets is not really an option. That option for the Jets kind of sailed away. So I don't know how they get in winning the division. In fact, I don't think they can. So now you got to compete with the Clevelands and the Pittsburghs and the Baltimores and the Indianapolises and the Jacksonvilles and the LA Chargers of the world and be one of the next best two teams. But it makes it difficult. It does. Let's go to Tariq in Jersey City. Tariq, you're on 98.7.
Hey, Dave, real quick, let me start off, man. How I was ranking on y'all the other day talking about, that was Tracy Morgan that had called up talking about, he was Dave from Jersey City. Talking all that smack on you, Kenny.
Yeah, the guy he sounded like, if you didn't hear it, the guy called the other day getting on me, Chris, and Rick, and he sounded just like Tracy Morgan, just complaining constantly.
I don't know, man. I'm a little sketchy on that, though, man. He kind of did sound like Tracy, but yeah.
He did. He sounded just like Tracy Morgan. Hey, Ty, we have a couple of...
Yeah, get out of Quick Candy, Jersey at?
That's, it candy does. Garbage.
Get this guy to call up every day. Please, Dave. Come on, man.
He was completely out of his mind.
Anybody know you?
But anyway, on another note. Oh, man.
Go ahead, Tariq. What do you got?
As far as the Giants go, man, this is going to be a disappointing season. I mean, I'm trying to be on a positive note. But, I mean, there's not really too much to be positive about. Odell is gone. Eli's on his way out. And, I mean... It's going to be, to me, I mean, I'd be glad if we get about 3-4 wins this season, Dave.
Oh, come on, you would not be glad if you get 3 or 4 wins. So what if you'd be glad with 3 or 4, what do you expect them to get?
Honestly, I mean, it's on the high end, maybe 6 wins if we're lucky, but I don't even think that many, Dave, honestly. Look at the schedule we have this season. And
I agree
we have
with you.
No
this
talent.
Is not going to be a good football team, but to say that there's no, I mean, if Daniel Jones, see, the Giants are in the position the Jets were in last year, Tariq. If Daniel Jones proves to you that he's going to be a good quarterback in this league by the end of the year, that's not enough for you?
No, that's great. Listen, that's positive,
that's,
brother.
So that's my point. That's all I need.
Exactly. Well, listen, at least you're a positive guy. Me, I'm not as positive, brother.
I'm not always positive, but listen, you finally, it looks like, and thanks for the call, have the replacement for Eli Manning. So at some point this year, and for me, earlier rather than later, I want to see what Daniel Jones is capable of doing. And if Daniel Jones is really, really good, and at the end of the year I can look at a buddy of mine and say, we have our quarterback of the future, that's all I need this year. That's all I need. To know that for the next 13 years I have my quarterback, that's all I need. David McCutcheon. I think it's McCutcheon. Dave, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, Dave?
What's up, Dave? You're in McCutcheon, right?
Yeah, McCutcheon.
All right, what do you got?
I'm a big Jets fan, and I'm happy to say that finally the culture has changed. With Joe Douglas, I think that we could go far, and we finally got some good pieces in place, and I think we can go playoff bound. I think we can compete with New England for once.
I wouldn't go that far. I think the playoffs are a realistic possibility. I mean, you think this could be an 11-win team, Dave?
If everything's clicking the right way, I think so. I just came from the Jets practice. I mean, yeah, they didn't go against another team, but pretty good. And I've been a Jets fan for a while.
Listen, if you leave, and thanks for the call, if you leave a practice and your thought is, boy, this team stinks, I mean, they really must stink because – for the most part, guys are going to look pretty good in practice. So the Jets look good in practice, and I agree with you. They have talent offensively that they haven't had in a very, very long time. I mean, they haven't had a running back of this ilk since, and don't tell me LaDainian Tomlinson because he wasn't at that stage of his career, since Curtis Martin. They haven't had a quarterback that has the potential to be as good as this guy since, I don't know if you want to say Chad Pennington or you want to go further back than that. Now, I'm not saying you have the elite receiver, but you have a couple of pretty good receivers. I really like Jamison Crowder, Robbie Anderson, Quincy Enunwa. I mean, there is talent here. The defense has definite talent. The question is, can Adam Gase morph this into a team that wins right away? Because you look at the first seven games of that schedule, and it is really, really daunting. So for me, the question is, can the Jets come out, seven games, be 3-4, have nine games to go, go 6-3 or 7-2 and get to 9 or 10 wins. Jabbar Peekskill. Jabbar, you're on 98.7.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
What's up?
How's it going? Yeah, so I definitely agree with you with the Jets. And I don't think that the playoffs, it's ideally for this year. I think they should just go out there, develop Sam Darnold, you know, make them take the step that second year quarterbacks take. And to build the chemistry with the team and look forward. I think they're still missing the big play receiver, you know, to take the top off the roof and help Le'Veon Bell out. But I think they have a great team to go out there and compete and play.
Yeah, but you know what? The second, right now, Jabbar, the second year quarterback goes to the postseason. He does. I mean, Carson Wentz, postseason, right? Dak Prescott, the postseason. You look at it, second year quarterbacks, Pat Mahomes, postseason. If they have a good team around them, there's no reason they can't go to the playoffs.
Which they had a little better teams, you know, all around, especially with the outside threat, except for the Cowboys, possibly.
At Robbie Anderson as a deep threat?
A deep threat, yes, but when you have Le'Veon Bell, I don't think they're going to take eight off the box to go, you know, protect him down there too far in the back as far as, you know, worry about Le'Veon Bell, how, you know, Dak has Zeke and Mahomes had Kareem Hunt most of the year.
But you have Lev Bell. I mean, Lev Bell, last we saw, was a top three running back in football.
No, this is why I'm a Jets fan, because of him. But I just feel like I don't think the outside threats are enough to take the eight out of the box for him. So, you know, if they get another threat to clear it up a little bit, I think the Jets could run the table and make some real big noise in AFC.
So you think they're an elite receiver away from making noise?
Yes.
And thanks for the call, Jabbar. I'll tell you what I think. I think they're a guy that can get the quarterback in a one-on-one matchup away from making some noise. That to me is Robbie Anderson is, and again, they're not great receivers. But between Enunwa, Crowder, Anderson, you should be fine. I mean, and what Lev Bell can do in the passing game, for my money, I'd spend it on a guy that can get to the quarterback rather than a deep threat right now, every day of the week.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
You know, it's funny. Shermer has been a coach on a couple different teams now, and I'm not giving him a hard time, and I think he has the potential to be a good coach. Record-wise, he's just been horrendous. So we'll see if the Giants can change that a little bit this year, or again, at least change the complexion of what this team is, to go from an and I love Eli as much as anybody, but to go from a kind of a slower, plodding, underneath quarterback to an athletic guy that has the arm that can go downfield. That's the big question. Can the Giants be that team? A team that changes the way they look and they take deep shots? Because this team right now does not take any. And we have the caller before say, you know, I think the Jets need a deep threat. The Giants need a guy that can get the ball deep. And I guess Daniel Jones did it effectively in practice and has wowed guys. And we'll see if he gets a chance to do a little bit of that starting Thursday night, a game you can hear starting at 6 o'clock against the Jets on 98.7 ESPN. So Don and Peter out at Giants camp in Rutherford this week. I don't care if you're a Cowboys fan, Eagles fan, Jets fan, can't stand the Giants, doesn't want anything to do with the Giants. You cannot dislike Saquon Barkley. Like, there are just certain guys that you can't dislike. He is one of them. He's so likable. He's so personable. He's so good. He's so unassuming. And hearing what he has to say, let's take a listen. Here is Barkley. The only thing that matters to him is winning.
A lot of people and people that I read up on and sit home and watch YouTube videos on, like the Kobe's and the Michael Jordan's of the world, or, you know, just great people in their areas, whatever they do. That's the focus that they have. And I'm passionate about this game, and I want to be one of the best to play, and I want to be one of the best Giants to play. And I understand to do that, you have to win championships. So the individual awards are cool, but at the end of the day, that's not the main thing.
And the guy is Rookie of the Year. He's as dynamic a running back as we've seen in the NFL in God knows how long, just to come into the league. I mean, he could do things that no one else can do. And as great as it is and as dynamic as he is, it doesn't move the needle for him. He wants to win. That's what you want. And that's why the Giants chose to go with him instead of Beckham, because Beckham was the opposite of that. Let's be fair. Beckham would have had that same sit down with them, or he probably wouldn't have sit down with them because he didn't do that. We were there last year, Canty and I. We got Eli. We got Barkley. We got everyone. And Beckham didn't sit down with us. So Beckham wouldn't have done the sit down. But regardless of that, Beckham is the kind of guy that is about me. And you can't argue with that. Whether you wanted him to go or not, you can't argue the point that Beckham wanted the attention. And that was the most important thing to him. And Barkley, it's the opposite. He wants to win. Here he is on winning the Rookie of the Year last season.
You won the Rookie of the Year. Yeah, that's awesome. But that's not trophy, not even in my house. Like, I haven't even seen it since. I've probably seen it once or twice.
Wow.
Ever since I won the award.
Storage? Agent? Who took that?
No, it's at my mama's house.
Okay.
But
okay,
it's
all
like,
right.
It's just, I don't need those awards. I'm not big into individual awards. Like I said, those are cool to have. And obviously that part with your legacy and what you want to become as a player, it's important to have. But the thing that matters the most is team wins and getting Super Bowls. And we didn't come close to that last year. So my focus is getting better in that area.
I mean, what are you looking for? Is this not whoever you root for? Cowboys, Eagles, Jets, Patriots, Falcons, whoever you root for. Is this not exactly what you want? Is this not exactly what you're looking for? And again, you know, the expectations are not high with the Giants. And the thing that I think is frustrating for a lot of Giants fans is of any position in this game, there's a real shelf life for the running back, right? I mean, realistically, 5 years, maybe seven. I mean, maybe if everything just works brilliantly, 8 or 9. But by the time he's 30, 31, is it realistic to think that Saquon Barkley is going to be that level of player? Probably not. So realistically, you get what from him? 5 years? So 5 years, this is year two. They're going to be a bad football team in year two. This concerns year two. Now, can it change? It can change quickly. But it has to change on the right arm of one guy. And that guy is not Eli Manning anymore, people. That guy is Daniel Jones. So this entirety of the season, I get it. You want to see Eli play well and go out nicely. And that this becomes the rub. Because how does Eli play well and go out where you look positively on the last season and Daniel Jones still get a lot of playing time? I don't know what the answer is to that. Because if you want to see Daniel Jones and you really want to see Eli, unless Eli's really good and the Giants are losing games, which I guess is a possibility, but how do you take a job away from Eli Manning if he's completing 68% of his passes and throwing for 280 yards a game and two touchdowns and zero or one interception? You take the job from him? Does he allow you to take the job from him? And I think therein lies kind of the issue. It's time. I mean, we all have to be honest with ourselves. It's time. We love Eli. He's an all-time Giant. I mean, I wouldn't mind if you changed the address of pulling into the stadium to Eli Manning Way. But this season is not about that. This season is about one thing, and that is, what is Daniel Jones? The quicker you can get him up to speed, and the quicker that you can have the conversation of, this is unequivocally my quarterback of the future. I love him. I want to watch him play. He's capable. He's dynamic. The quicker you know that the Giants are moving in the right direction. Because so help me God, if you go through this season and Eli starts 15 games and Daniel Jones starts one, and you go into next season with a complete question mark, as an organization, in my opinion, you failed. You've failed. The number one thing that has to come out of this year is Daniel Jones and moving him along. And I'm sorry if it comes at the expense of Eli Manning. And I'm sorry if it comes at playing time for Eli Manning. And I'm sorry if it comes at the expense of maybe winning another game or two. But that's not what this is about. Just the opposite. You know it and I know it. This is about Daniel Jones. This is not a playoff team. You look at this defense. This is not a playoff caliber team. It's about one thing. Daniel Jones. You win four games. I don't care if the Giants go 2-14. I really don't. If after week 17, I can say the quarterback of the future, without a doubt, is Daniel Jones, I would accept 2-14. Over 8-8 with Eli Manning starting every game. Absolutely, I would.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com. He's pompous.
Listen, shut up and I'll tell you the story.
He's arrogant.
Do you think there's a lot of things out there that I wouldn't be good at?
And sometimes he's downright mean.
I know you know what that's like, to be that uncomfortable, pimply-faced, not very popular kid.
But now it's your chance to prove him wrong.
It's dumb.
Call 800-919-3776 with your question and let's stump Dave Rothenberg.
And away we go. 800-919-3776. Stump Rothenberg, brought to you by the law offices of the great Andrew M. Cohen. You know how it works. You ask a question, I answer it, away we go. Last week, subpar, let's be fair. I think we were 6-7 last week. That is not good enough. We need to be better today. We start with Andy and Merrick. Andy, you lead us off. Stump Rothenberg.
Happy Hall of Fame Day, David.
Same to you, Andy.
So mine is a Hall of Fame question.
Okay.
What retired player, meaning not Antonio Gates or Larry Fitzgerald, but what retired player has the most touchdowns in NFL history but not inducted into canon?
That's a nice question. Most touchdowns in NFL history, not in Canton. So Randy Moss is in Canton now, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah. And Andre Reed, I believe, is in Canton.
Correct.
I don't know that I'm going to know this. I don't know.
Do you want a hint?
No. I'm going to ask you a question, but I really... I'm thinking Harold Carmichael, but that's probably not right. I'm thinking like those old Chargers, like... No, and James Lofton, I know, is in.
Yep.
I'm going to guess Harold Carmichael.
No, it is University of Alabama running back Sean Alexander.
I don't know why I was thinking. Good question. I don't know why I was thinking receiver when I was thinking that. All right, 0-1. Let's go to Chris and Bethpage. Chris, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Hey, Dave. There have been several players that have hit homers in four consecutive at-bats. Mm-hmm. Only one player has done it without starting. He did it over two games without starting either game.
So give me this question again.
Sure. This player hit four homers in four consecutive at-bats over two games, and he didn't start either game.
Carlos Gonzalez?
No. Can I give you a hint?
No.
He played on the Mets. All right.
Sean Green.
He was a Met, but he didn't do it with the Mets.
He was a Met, but he didn't do it with the Mets. Mike Camp.
Art Chamsky.
Mm. All right. Boy, the level of question is just it's raising continuously.
Well, because they see how good you are at this.
Yeah.
They're trying to meet the level of expectation.
Well, it looks like they're outdistancing what I'm capable of doing. Let's go to John in Manhattan. John, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Good morning, Dave. The subject is college football.
Okay.
What school has won a national championship without playing a bowl game?
I'm going to say it's going to have to be a long time ago. I'm thinking either an Army or a Navy. I'm going to go with Navy.
Wrong. It's Notre Dame. They won 7 national championships without playing a bowl game.
All right. This is not an auspicious debut to this segment here today. I wonder where the people that think that there's cheating going on are right now. Ty, you're probably not one of those at this point. All right. Let's go to Mike in Farmingdale and see if we can get off the schneid. Mike, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Dave, what's up, man?
What's going on, Mike?
All right, you ready?
Yeah, maybe not.
Last night, I happened to catch from the beginning Tombstone, the movie.
Okay.
What infectious disease did Doc Holliday die from? It was based in real life, you know. So the real man
died of a legitimate disease?
Yes, an infectious disease.
Tuberculosis.
Correct, sir.
I don't feel good about this at all. I feel like the level of questions are getting to a. I mean, no one can answer these.
No one except for you. You're the one
I'm 1 in 3.
Listen,
even the genius that I am is 1 in 3 today.
Listen, every single week. You pump up just how smart you are, all this intelligence you've conjured up over the course of your, 60 years of living?
I have a lot of knowledge.
You have
I'm
a ton
46.
Of knowledge. You have a ton of knowledge. So
I have a lot of knowledge.
With that comes expectation and responsibility. So you got to be accountable. 1 in 3 is not good enough.
It's not. I'm not arguing that.
To whom
like
to whom much is given, much is required. And yes, as you know, yesterday was the 40-year anniversary of Thurman Munson's death. Mm-hmm. He was funeralized on August 6th, a day
is
the
that
Yankee,
a word, funeralized?
That is indeed a word.
That's a beautiful word.
And so the Yankees played the Orioles that day. As we remember, Bobby Mercer collected 5 RBIs, including a walk-off 2-run single against which Orioles pitcher?
I mean, seriously? I have a lot of knowledge. Are you really going there?
This is an answer that you should know. This is a question you
should
have an answer
Bobby
to.
Bobby Mercer. So we're 79 here. God. So it's got to be a reliever. I mean, I don't know the answer to this. I'm going to guess, because I don't know any of their relievers on that team. I will guess... Jim Palmer's such a horrendous guess.
You're losing it, man.
I don't have the answer for you.
Tippy Martinez.
At least we've heard of Tippy Martinez.
Tippy Martinez.
Tippy Martinez.
I got a bonus for you. The Orioles scored 4 runs in that game.
I have no idea.
The last 2 runs were scored on a 2-run home run by who?
Mickey Rivers.
Ken Singleton.
No. That's a... All right, so I mean, you're just driving home the. Maybe we'll stop doing the segment.
Really, you're going to give up that easily?
I mean,
you can't be a quitter.
Questions that are almost unanswerable.
Come on,
let's go to Joe in Staten Island. Joe, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
How you doing, Dave? My question is: what was the first touchdown scored in U.S. Bank Stadium, and why was it so ironic?
The first touchdown in U.S. Bank Stadium. I don't know.
It was Rogers to Nelson. That was the night they were honoring Prince after he passed away. Oh, and that was Prince's name, Rogers Nelson.
Yeah, all right.
Come on. Hang in there, Dave.
Ty, I mean, no one can answer these questions. I mean, no one can answer these questions. Well, we'll go to Steve in Brooklyn. Steve, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Love the show, Dave.
What do you got?
going to stay in baseball here. Who hit the last home run of the 20th century?
The last home run of the 20th century?
We're talking 99 World Series.
So the 99 World Series. I'm going to say, I don't know, but Tino Martinez.
Jim Leyritz.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is pathetic.
You're a bad guy.
I think we almost need to end not just the segment, but the show. You should be absolutely embarrassed.
If me botching Stump Rothenberg to end the show at 10:40 would happen, I would be more than... Can we do that?
Come on. You've got to be ashamed of yourself.
I'm not happy.
Well, because you say you got to be better than 6-7. What are you, 1-8?
I mean, the questions are... I mean, no one can answer these questions. I'm very fragile. You could have the guy that just won Jeopardy would know these. Have you known any of them?
I've known a couple of them.
What have you known?
The question I asked, I knew the answer to that one.
Because you looked it up.
Oh, because I did a show yesterday where we did Thurman Munson for an hour.
All right, let's go to Bill in Queens. At least we have to end on a high note. Bill, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Good morning. In 1961, Roger Maris hit 61 home runs. During that season, what is one thing that never happened to him while at bat and why?
He was never intentionally walked because Mickey Mantle hit behind him.
That's correct.
That's a better question. Some of these questions are out of control. You think we should stop it with a correct answer there?
I have
Nish,
a question.
You want to ask yours?
Yeah.
But yours is going to be awful. I'm not going to be able to get it. And it's going to put me in a worse mood.
Okay, Dave, who was the first artist known to use auto-tune?
You always ask these obscure music questions. First artist to what?
First artist known to use auto-tune.
to use auto-tune?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a terrible question, isn't it?
No.
That's a good question.
A lot of artists use auto-tune these days, but who was the first?
The first one?
Yes.
God, I don't know. I'm going to say, you always ask like Prince kind of questions. I'm going to say Prince.
No.
What's the answer?
Cher. And her song, Do You Believe? In Love After Love, that song.
The terrible question.
No, it's not.
I'm not ending on that terrible of a question. I'm going to go to John and Queens. I'm ending on a correct answer. John and Queens, you're on Stump Rothenberg.
Hey, how you doing?
So here's right,
I'm good. It's a Hollywood question.
Of course it is.
Which actor or actress has most? Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm getting a little nervous.
Stumbled a little bit. Sorry about that. Which actor or actress has the most Academy Award nominations without winning?
So it's a loser, is what you're saying. Someone who's been nominated, but
who's the
never
biggest
won.
Loser, basically? Yes.
All right, so let's think back now. The Meryl Streep has won a million times. Peter O'Toole, I don't think, ever won. Glenn Close, I don't think, has ever won. I'll go Peter O'Toole.
You are correct, sir. 8 nominations.
Do you have 8? Is that what he said? 8, I think?
Yeah, 8. Yeah, 8.
Yeah. And Richard Burton, I don't think, ever won. Glenn Close.
Yeah, I think he had 7. And Glenn Close, I think, had 6.
And Meryl Streep has the most, I think, right? She's the leader of the clubhouse.
Most wins, I think.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so Ty, we got that. We got in 2 of the last 3. Are we done?
Yeah, I think we're... I mean, what an embarrassment.
That was not... You know what? I want to see you do this.
I don't know how you go to bed tonight and not feel absolutely ashamed after this performance today.
You know what?
You're so negative.
I'm like one of the Walenda brothers. You know those guys that they go out on the high wire? Occasionally, those guys plummet.
Today was a plummet, but
I'll be back.
And what I love that you tried to do just now with that last question, you got it right, and then you throw in all these other interesting tidbits of information that you knew as if it's going to improve your batting average today. No, that's not how it works. You got all the other questions wrong.
Today was pretty bad.
The both of you. You know what? I was going to go to management and suggest a show for you, Ty, but that is, forget about that.
At Rothenberg ESPN, y'all need to be in his mentions killing him.
The people love me. They absolutely love me. And if you look at my batting average today, I don't even think it was that bad. Batting average wise?
No, baseball wise.
300?
Yeah, you hit 300.
All right, so there we go.
You can't start the, you can't say that after you started the segment saying we've got to improve upon that woeful performance last week where we went 6-for-15.
I didn't realize we'd have like the Russian mafia coming after me with these questions. I mean, these questions are brutal.
You got to be prepared.
I am. My whole life is preparation for these. Some of these questions.
It's a testament.
You know, I'm not going to sit here.
It's a testament to how much they respect you.
It was not a great performance. I hit two of my last three. We'll study this week as best we can, and we'll be back at it next week. That's all I can do. Put my head down and do the best I can. That's all I can do. So you being abusive of me in a verbal manner does nothing to change the fact that I am not pleased with my performance today. Now, a good teammate would say, like, Dave, you're fine. You had one slip up. You still got.
Sometimes you need tough love, my friend. You need tough love. You're not
a good. Today was a rough day. I'm on your side, Dave. Today was a rough day.
Thank you, Mish. And Stump Rothenberg is brought to you by the Law Offices of Andrew M. Cohen. Whether the issue is simple or complex, the Law Office of Andrew M. Cohen can help you achieve your needs through careful legal planning. All you have to do is call 516-877-0595 or visit amcohenlaw.com.
See, Mish is going to be Aaron Boone. I'm going to be Joe Girardi. I might get fired in my efforts, but at least I go out with some dignity.
Well, fired in your efforts sounds pretty good right now.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
All right, Rothenberg with you, 98.7 ESPN. Certainly a subpar performance. I'm not taking all the blame, though. I think, Ty, you're very much to blame for that as well. I mean, some of the questions that you allowed to sneak through by you.
It's interesting in that I guarantee, had you gotten those questions that correctly, you wouldn't be ripping me right now. You would think that they were great questions.
I mean, the first touchdown ever at U.S. Bank Stadium.
You remember when the Rangers lost that playoff game and you had to stay in a hotel for the weekend because you couldn't face your family?
At least get the history correct.
What you should do. So what happened?
It was never the Rangers.
It was the Giants?
Yeah.
Okay, so point still remains. What you should do now is the same thing this weekend. I don't think you should stay home. I'm
a matured version of my former self, Ty.
Because
I don't flee. I mean, I own it, and we move on.
You don't own it because you're blaming me for it.
Because it's your fault. I mean, if you would have done it better, and I'm getting a lot of texts in. The questions are horrendous. I mean, listen, yeah. I don't want to put it all on you because I got to be better, but I would say 51% was on you of that.
No, it was absolutely on you. And then you want to say, what if another host did the segment? Well, you can't say you're taking all the credit or all the blame for it.
I'm not gonna stoop to the level that you're trying to. I wanna hear from the people. These are my people. 800-919-3776. He's been waiting forever, and he wants to talk about Melo, and he's D from Queens. D, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, man? Listen, to all the Melo apologists, always remember the way Melo came to the Knicks. He even alluded to, I never had the talent. Yeah, because you couldn't wait 3 months. The Knicks would have gave up all their assets for Chris Paul, who you went to his wedding or whatever, and you guys basically were trying to plot. Well, you blew up the plot because you were impatient. Like, come on, man. Stop being an apologist for a guy who, part of the reason you said it was bigger than basketball in Houston. Yeah, you got the lead assistant who was Fizdelic, who was his first coach in the NBA fired, and D'Antoni fired. I mean, you think that wasn't going to ever come back
now,
to you?
You know, it's funny, dude. You say all these Melo apologists. I think most people are agree with you more than the other side of this.
Yeah, I get it. But, like, what happened to Melo at the end of the Knicks' tenure with Phil Jackson was disgusting. That was disgusting. But Melo has to look in the mirror. He has the body type that he could play like Draymond Green if he put in the work.
He could never be Draymond. Draymond Green is so much more of a complete player than Carmelo Anthony. I'm not saying he's clearly, obviously, not a better scorer, thanks to the call, D. But as far as a complete player, he doesn't play defense like Draymond Green. He doesn't. He never did. He never has. He was never capable of that. Draymond Green brings a different skill set. Because Draymond Green is almost the kind of guy that realized he could never put in 20 points a game, and to have a huge impact on the game, he had to do these other things. That's what Draymond Green was. Carmelo Anthony was always the guy that thought that he could put 35 points on the board every single game. And for a lot of games, he was. I'm somewhere in the middle of this Melo conversation. There are times that I look at him and he frustrates me, and I think back at what could have been, and he's frustrating. There are other times that I think that that he's unfairly treated. I mean, look at what the Knicks have been since he left. The Knicks record, I think they lose three out of every four games since Carmelo Anthony left. So I was never a huge Melo guy. I thought he was, and you heard Chauncey Billups say it a couple weeks ago. Like stats, numbers, that was very important to Carmelo Anthony. Now think about what we just heard earlier. Saquon Barkley, and yeah, Rookie of the Year trophy, I don't even have that. That's in my mom's house because that doesn't mean anything to me. With Carmelo Anthony, that would be, you know, on the mantle front and center. Was he a great Nick? I don't know. Was he a great scorer? Absolutely. Did he succeed here with the Knicks? Ultimately, no, but he succeeded more at the Knicks than they have in the last 20 years, outside of him being here. Kevin in Brooklyn. Kevin, you're on 98.7.
Hey, talking about Melo, the Knicks fans and basketball guys in general need to give Melo a break. He took the Knicks further than they've been in the last 20 years, and all they want to do is bash him. He's going to be along that team with Patrick Ewing. Oh,
no way. He's not, Kevin, he's not Patrick Ewing.
No, he's not Patrick Ewing, but he's going to be remembered in the same vein.
No, he's not.
Later, when he's retired,
no, he's not. He never will. Carmelo Anthony will never be remembered the way Patrick Ewing was a warrior. Patrick Ewing couldn't get past maybe the greatest player in the history of the game, but went to the finals, was an elite player, left everything on the court. There is no way Carmelo Anthony is in that category.
I agree with that. Revisionists will remember him in the same way they remember Patrick now.
How many times do I have to sit here and tell you, no, that is not the case. Carmelo Anthony will not be remembered the same way that Patrick Ewing is. The longer we've gotten since the career of Patrick Ewing, the more you adore him. We're already a couple years away from Carmelo Anthony, and I don't feel anything like that for him.
You don't, but there are a lot of people that will. I guarantee it.
No, I guarantee you're wrong. Call me back in 5 years, and I guarantee you're wrong. I guarantee you. There is no way that Patrick Ewing and Carmelo Anthony should ever be lumped together as far as their tenure with the Knicks. I have unbelievably fond memories of Patrick Ewing. I don't feel the same way about Carmelo. Mario in Jersey. Mario, you're on 98.7.
Hey. Hey, Dave, big fan.
Thanks.
Just a question before I mention my statement. Am I missing something? Is any team that takes up Melo, are they going to be paying anything or basically for free?
No, you just get them.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, there's an obvious team that no one's mentioning in the media, basically the Brooklyn Nets. They need somebody kind of instead of Durant this year. And he's basically a veteran. He can.
But is he willing to? Here's the thing, though, Mario. Thanks. Is he willing to be a guy that changes the semblance of his game? Is he willing to be a guy that comes off the bench and gives you 24 minutes a game? Because if he wants to be the guy, and I think that's the biggest thing with Carmelo Anthony. And we spent 5 minutes, and that's fine. RG Bell's going to join us in a minute. I really don't want to turn this into the Carmelo Anthony show because I really don't care at this point. I honestly don't. Like, he's gone. He had his time here. He was a good Nick. They won 54 games with him. They never got to a conference finals. And let's leave it at that. I don't care anymore. I think he was a somewhat selfish player. I think scoring was ultimately the most important thing for him. But was he a good Nick? Yeah, he was a good Nick. When I get 10 years down the road and I start listing the greatest Knicks of all time, Carmelo Anthony will not be on my list. Nowhere near my list. Frazier, Monroe, Ewing, Reed, Bernard King, hopefully some new guys in the next decade, but Carmelo Anthony will not be, I promise you, on my list.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
RJ Bell, live from Las Vegas. Good morning, RJ Bell.
I got to be honest with you. A few months ago, there was a photo shoot, and they said typically there's like five people participate. Uh-huh. There were 10. And I think they took 3,000 pictures, and I think there were two good ones. So all I know is those two are the truth.
Not the 2998?
Exactly.
Well, it's America, baby. To be back with you as we do every Saturday. And my friend, football, I know it's preseason. I know it's just Canton, but football, nonetheless, is right in front of us.
Well, listen, I said it last week, and it bears repeating. Is if you ask the typical professional batter, when is the time that they could hit the highest percentage? What subseason? You know, NFL playoffs, NFL preseason, baseball playoffs. Just think all the different little subseasons. I think on a majority of professionals, preseason is going to be at the top of the win list. And, you know, this is this piece of advice I'm going to give.
But there's so much unknown. Like, if I was gambling, well, I would be so nervous about betting. You don't know how long guys are going to play for or who these guys are. I would feel so uncomfortable with betting on preseason.
And let me ask you a serious question. And again, Dave, for new listeners, highly respected intellect, Dave, you, from my perspective. So I'm asking sincerely, what separates in your mind a winning professional bettor? What attributes? Now, listen, obviously he wins, right? He or she wins. So I get that part. But what are the core qualities that leads to a winning bettor?
You don't take emotion into account.
I think that's a great one on the list. Okay. One.
I think you have to be well studied in whatever you're going to be.
But what does that lead to, which is the answer I'm looking for, which is ability to price, to gauge uncertainty, right? Is if everything is as expected, the good handicapper is going to do just fine. But it's when something's a little different. That's not quite a home game. It's in Jacksonville, but it's not in Miami. So do you give it 2 points or 1 point for home? What's the crowd going to be like? Is the hotness of the weather going to matter? So to me, the preseason does have more uncertainty to price, which is exactly why it's such an opportunity for the best handicappers. And let me tell you, here's that piece of info I was going to give that you stepped on. I was going to say it was worth the price of admission. This one sentence. Bookies tell you, the sports books tell you their confidence level by the limits they accept. So in a typical NFL Sunday, you walk up on game day and you want to bet $50,000 on an NFL side, no problem. You can be the best professional bettor, they're going to take it. In the preseason, it's $1,000. So literally the confidence is about 50 times as much in the regular season. From the bookie's perspective, that they got the right number. And effectively, that's what you're trying to do, is find the bookies with the wrong number.
So looking at the preseason as we're about to really kick off into it, because the Hall of Fame game underway, but now we have 4 full weeks of preseason football, what are some of the things you look at to give you an edge against the Bucs?
Well, we can actually, it's almost like we rehearsed this, we can look back at Thursday and say, okay, here's a good example of one of the key macro factors. How much does the coach care about preseason? And, you know, back in the day, a guy that's got a big fan base in New York,
Parcells used to care a lot.
Bill Parcells is, I joke that there are a lot of pro bettors from the 90s that should have their beach houses named for Parcells, because the market did not catch up as quick as it did. You know, now you have a team that does really well or coach or really poorly in the preseason, and it's priced into the number pretty quickly. Back in the day, a lot of money made on Parcells. Now, the opposite side, Tony Dungy. It's almost like they didn't want to win the preseason games with the Colts specifically. So Atlanta entering Thursday night, Quinn, 8 straight losses straight up in the preseason, 8 straight against the spread. So the odds maker, who isn't all that sharp typically, it's just a sports book that puts the first number out, they opened up Atlanta as the favorite in the game. Denver ended up closing as like a field goal favorite, and Denver covered the spread. So there was massive money on Denver, and Denver covered. Now, some would say they were lucky to cover, and maybe the market's catching up to Atlanta. 9 straight, though, straight up losses in the preseason under Quinn and against the spread. And again, it's what is the will? And what does that affect, Dave? It affects your rotation, how long you play your players. Also, it affects, do you game plan at all? How much you convey to the team, it matters. You've been around a lot of teams. I mean, different coaches approach it differently.
No, it's fascinating. So coming into this preseason, are there any tips, any pushes that you can give people into a certain direction of teams that are really looking to win these preseason games?
Now, listen, I am not a fan of the Harbaughs. I admit that readily. Now, imagine this.
Because they have a Michigan background. And,
exactly.
Yeah, and you're an alum of Ohio State. I know how you play.
Of Ohio State, and I'm a Steelers fan, right? So I am, you know, the first step, and this is, you know, Socrates said, a man who knows what he doesn't know knows a lot. Well, I know I've got a bias. I know I'm not thinking clearly against a Harbaugh. So I kind of let it fly on the radio with a caveat, don't bet with emotion, and I don't. But boy, I think Harbaugh is just a selfish dude for the Ravens. He's won, and I'm going by memory here, I think it's 13 straight preseason games against the spread.
Really?
Yes. And
they covered 13 consecutive preseason games?
Exactly. Doesn't that just seem like a, again, I'm talking against the spread. Doesn't it seem selfish that he...
I don't know that it seems selfish. I mean, well, it's certainly something to take note of.
Let me ask you a question, though. Is what if you were a coach and somehow you were incentivized to win in the preseason, what would you do? What would be the way you would increase your chance of winning?
I'd play my starters longer.
Exactly. What is the residual cost of that?
Injury.
And also, you're not really getting to see the young guys as much. So you're not able to kind of ascertain who's might surprise you. Right?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
So in a way, Harbaugh, and this is my personal opinion.
But he said, but RJ, you can't look at the regular season and say this is a guy that's struggling. I mean, he's a terrific coach.
I mean, how many? I'm confused. How many really good seasons? No, I agree. He is a good.
They're competitive every single year.
I agree. You just got to wonder, would the team be bad? Well, not every single year. They had a couple of five winners there in the last five or six.
For the most part, he's done a really good job.
Yeah,
with that.
I agree.
If he were to lose his job, do you think another team would line up for him?
Yeah, here's my test. If he coaches the opposition, you know, one of the teams that is a rival with your team, are you hoping he gets fired? I was hoping he got fired because I thought the Ravens would do more poorly because of it. So, yes, I think he's a good coach. But I do think that ego, let's be candid, that, oh, we got to win no matter what, does come at a cost. Because if you win because you're motivating the team to play harder, that's one thing in the preseason. You can even question that. But if you're not given that, you know, the cut line type decisions that do that they deserve, I mean, I think the team gets hurt by it.
Well, honestly, people that are looking to wager money on this probably don't care all that much.
True enough.
Thing that you care about is these 13 consecutive games against the spread in the preseason.
Dave, I don't know if you know this, but life is just not about, just only about the dollars. I mean, sometimes you have fandom. I mean, it's almost like of all the hours we've talked, I've probably talked as a fan an hour, you know, out of, let's say, 50 we've talked. And somehow you're chastising me for like 30 seconds. I'm speaking as a fan. You're like, but what about the money, mofo?
Well, I don't know that I would go that far. But no, I mean, people, you're giving me trends. So, yes, the fact that he's selfish or wants to win or cover in the preseason or doesn't give guys the opportunity that maybe they even deserve or pushes the starters a little bit further, that's not the conversation I want to have. I want to have give me winners in the preseason. And it sounds like you're giving me, you know, Baltimore, whatever the number is. They're going to cover.
Now here's the question, though. When does the adjustment happen enough? And, you know, have to look at the lines for next week. And it does have a good segue into these teams that do have the Hall of Fame game, Denver and Atlanta. I tend to like to bet both of them, not blindly, but both of them the next week. The theory being like an old college football situation where a team is playing their first game against a team that's playing their second game, it's a big advantage to be further along in your evolution. You came to camp earlier. You're going to play your rotation a little differently. And usually the market doesn't account for that, especially with the loser, because the world just saw the loser lose. And remember, and this is pretty amazing, is more money was bet on the preseason Hall of Fame game than 7 out of 10 baseball games that night. So there were 10 baseball.
People love betting on the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, even the Hall of Fame game. So a lot of people saw Atlanta. They heard about the streak. They're hearing about it now. So on one hand, I think people are going to be looking to bet against Atlanta, you know, fade that losing streak. On the other hand, this feels like the perfect time to play on them because they have a game advantage, as in they're further in their prep, and they're going to be undervalued, it would seem, because they just lost in front of the world. But boy, that 0-9 is so strong. it makes me just want to pass the game. But I would say be cautious next week of betting against Atlanta. This is one of their prime spots in theory where they would bounce back.
It's funny because the old adage, and you probably heard this, is if you bet preseason football, you're just a fool. Like you have some kind of a real gambling problem if you're going to sit and bet real money on preseason football. But you're sitting here telling us that that's really not true anymore.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you think the bookies would welcome gigantic bets if they thought it wasn't yes. dangerous for them?
Yeah. But I'm sure you've heard that, right? Like, you're just a really sick, you know, sick, sadistic kind of person if you're going to sit there and bet preseason football.
And I think, in a way, that's insightful about how a professional or how even as a serious amateur, you can't look. I mean, imagine, this is the example I always give. Imagine you own a casino in Atlantic City, and blackjack is something where, and let's not say blackjack because you can count cards. Let's say roulette. Unless the wheel is crooked, you cannot lose as the house roulette over the long term. Just not possible.
Right.
Imagine a casino owner sitting up with the eye in the sky in the camera room going, uh-oh, we've lost, oh my gosh, four straight spins on table 27. Should we shut that table down? What should we do? It's absurd, right? If you trust... And that it's hard to get to the level of trusting it. If you trust your edge, you got to look at the games themselves like a sample in a spreadsheet, just, you know, or like literally the spin of the dice. And that if you've got an edge in the long term, it doesn't matter the streaks. And that's one of the great challenges. You talked about it earlier, is being unemotional about those swings, because the only way you can lose with winning information, if you have winning picks, the only way you can lose is if you quit betting. And that's what people, you know, the picks themselves, or quit betting in general. And that's what people tend to do. They get a winning source. Let's say me, for example, let's just be candid, had a great year on your show last year.
Hey, you did lose to Canty, but other than that, you did well.
Well, Canty had a great year, too, and there was a lot of shenanigans.
And this is going to happen, the redo, right? Like you and Chris are gonna...
I want to ramp stuff up. But I'll tell you this. I mean, $5,000 to his charity, which, again, kudos on him having a wonderful charity. But it's time for my charity to get its love and and its dollars. But the fact is, a lot of shenanigans, but other than that, we were well over 60% winners on the show. Imagine, though, at some time during that run, we probably went 1-3. I don't remember, but let's assume if you had said, oh, no winner is ever going to go 1-3, you quit betting winning information. So, in general, the paradox is if you're a loser, people end up talking themselves into that it's bad luck. So the loser wants to be more discerning. The winner should be less discerning. The question is, are you assessing yourself correctly?
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.